Okay. We'll begin. Okay, this session is about teaching Chumash skills. Now you see on the board some of the stuff I create, the organization I founded, Torah for Children. Someone asked me a minute ago if this is an advertisement for the children's Chumash or I'm going to be actually teaching Chumash skills in this session, like is this an informative session? So I'm going to answer that it's an informative session. You'll hear soon a lot of information, Bez Hashem. But I cannot lie that a lot of this information I'm going to be giving you has been put into this children's Chumash, and that's what I'm basing it off, and that's how you can see it. So let's first begin. What is the goal of teaching Chumash? What is teaching Chumash all about? Chumash is the children's first experience with Torah textual learning. Learning Torah from a text. This is their first experience. As they get older, they're going to be learning from a text more and more and more until they're learning completely independently. But their first experience is Chumash. They learn Kriya. And Kriya is just teaching the basic building blocks of how to read Aleph Beis into words. But actual learning with Havana and meaning is when they learn Chumash. That's the first subject usually that's taught. And the goal of teaching Chumash, a lot of times we talk about skills. Most of the people in this room are the younger generation. Everyone in this room is from a younger generation. And we all, when we grew up, I think there was less emphasis on skills than there is today. Much lesser emphasis. I can say myself, my own experience when I was younger, I didn't feel there was as strong of an emphasis on Chumash skills. And over the years, you're hearing more and more emphasis. I mean, in this platform, the Chinuch HaMechanchim, it's one of the themes that come up every other year, is teaching skills. And this is something that there's been more of an emphasis. Post-World War II, the emphasis was on rebuilding Yiddishkeit. And after a couple of generations, you realize you got to do a little more than that. And it's got to be professional as well. And that's something that's been promoted over the years, which is a good thing. But a lot of times when we talk about Chumash skills, we get carried away with it a little too much, not understanding what is actually the matara, what is the goal and the objective that we're doing this for. Shirashim, we talk about Shirashim. The kids should know Shirashim. Well, of course it's important that the kids know Shirashim. If they don't know Shirashim, they're not going to understand how to decode words on their own. The Lashon HaKodesh is built of a system, of a yesod of a word. And then the beginning letters, the end letters, that's how Lashon HaKodesh is built. So you need to understand that concept. But that's if you just stop there, that's not what it's all about. There's a lot more to it than that. What is the goal of teaching Chumash? So first of all, Chumash is the foundation of Yiddishkeit. Chumash is the Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav means this is the foundation. Torah Shebapeh is the explanation. Torah Shebichsav is the foundation. Teaching Chumash, when we teach Chumash to the children, we're giving them Yesoid of Yiddishkeit. This is the foundation. This is where everything is based off. That's point number one. When we teach Chumash in the younger years, the goal is Lav Dafka, the amount, the kamus, of Chumash we're giving over. Everybody knows this. The goal is that the children should be able to learn independently. Most of the people in this room are doing chitas. Everyone, I'm sure, is doing chitas. And we go through the whole Chumash Shichum Shetara every year. And does it make a difference if we did three parshas or two parshas or four parshas or one parsha when we were in first grade or second grade? What makes a difference is that now we can do chitas on our own. So whatever's needed, the Eichus is more important. In the younger years, the Eichus is really more important than the Kamas. Because once they get the Eichus, the Kamas is going to come 1, 2, 3. That again, that doesn't mean that you should cover less ground if you're able to do more, because that's just watering it down. But again, the main goal in the younger years is the Eichus, because once they get it, they'll be able to learn on their own. Learning Chumash, aside from being the foundation of Yiddishkeit, also is the foundation to give over Yerushalayim. For example, a lot of stories in Chumash really give over Yiras Shamayim. And this is something that the children will base themselves off as they get older. One thing that's neglected from Chumash, in my opinion, and something I tried to bring out in the children's Chumash, and you mentioned the story before, one thing that's, I don't want to say neglected, but because it's, the truth is it's hard to give over. It is a very hard thing to give over, is the Hayrah. Torah, Miloshon, Hayrah. So we learn Torah, Miloshon, Hayrah when we learn the Kutisichis, and the Rebbe will always give over something that is Torah, Miloshon, Hayrah, that you learn the whole concept of new Pirush in Pshat and Rashi, Pshat and Chumash, and now the Hayrah, the Rebbe Dendu Sicha will give Hayrah on how to take it to practice. But when we're teaching Chumash to younger children, the Hayrah has to be a little more than that, meaning say, the Hayrah has to be something that they're going to actually translate into their practical day-to-day life, in the life of a young child. Translate either into their behavior or into their practice of mitzvahs. That's called Hayrah. So one of the things that was done in the children's Chumash, one of the things that was done in children's Chumash is to have a story that brings out Hayrah. And although it takes, you learn the whole Chumash and then you can learn a parak and Chumash and it can take you a few weeks. And you come to the Hayrah and it's a story and it can take you 5 minutes or 10 minutes. But really that's where you're taking the learning. That's where you're taking the learning and translating it into the final thing, the Hayrah. And if the Hayrah is missing, the learning is missing. If you didn't learn Almanas Lasois, Lilmoid Almanas Lasois is not called proper learning. There's a bunch of steps. When we learn, there are a bunch of steps. Here shows a chart of the steps of learning. You come to comprehension, you come to number 4, and it says practical application. If you didn't apply something practically, then the whole learning is missing. The learning needs to come into something practical. Torah Meloshon Hayrah and Luma that Amalas Lasis. So when we talk about the goal of teaching Chumash, this is really the ultimate goal that, number one, they learn, understand what they're learning. That's what the decoding is for. And then the comprehension. Decoding means to be able to just make sense of what you're saying in your own language that you understand. The comprehension is understand what you learned, but understanding is only when it's Amalas Lasis. But if it's not a manas lasis, it's not proper learning. The Torah, the mitzvah Talmud Torah is a manas lasis. That is the mitzvah Talmud Torah. We could have that debate another time. I'm saying that your comprehension is applying is the last step of comprehension. But I'm saying if we neglect the application, there's something missing in the learning. If the learning wasn't the heron versus Heron, if the learning wasn't that it affected you, the learning is lacking. It's not arguing with what you're saying. I hope you understand that. Then afterwards is review. That means if you learned something and you understood it, but you didn't review it, it's going to get forgotten. And we know that if it says in Pirkei Avos, it's all about how Loimed and someone learned and he forgets what he learned, then that's a chisaron in the learning too. So that's why the chazara is an integral part of the learning process as well. And we know also that when you chazar something, as you chazar it, it sticks into your head better. And one of the things I noticed, that when I learned smicha, when I did smicha and I got my smicha certificate, I felt that growing up, I don't know how it is today, but growing up, smicha was the first time I was taught how to review. Chazar is something that doesn't happen on its own. Chazar is something that kids need to be taught how to chazar something. And one thing I noticed that when you learn something a few times, every time you learn it again, it goes faster each time, and after the fourth or fifth time, it sticks into your head that you have a mental image of it. A lot of times it's tempting when a rush, the principal wants a certain amount to be covered when a rush, and then when we get to the finish the learning, okay, a quick chazara for 5 minutes, an hour, and let's give a test and let's move on because we're in a rush. And the problem with that is, even the kid that is the best kid, the smartest kid, and he sat in class and he did everything he's supposed to, it's impossible that the learning he did is going to be stay in his head, not only stay in his head for now, but loyal and void as well. It's impossible. If he doesn't chazar it go over it again a few times, it's impossible that he's going to be learning it properly. As you go through it each time, the learning is better as well. You have a better understanding of it, and it's more into your head. Yes. I asked this question, but I forgot to mention that. People, they should have been given out like papers or something, because earlier they did. Make note of questions, and I'm going to have a question and answer session for later. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I know what you're talking about. Every day going over what you've done. Correct. But I'm going to argue something strong, if you don't mind. The back chazara doesn't replace this. Because if you do back chazara without this, you could have faulty learning just doing back chazara, faulty learning. That means when the kid learns something the first time, they have to, before they move on to the next thing, they have to properly review it inside again like they learned it the first time. And each time it goes faster. Once the kid has it at the fourth or fifth time, and it's stuck in his head, now you do spend your 10 minutes doing Bech Hazara. That's just sort of like to maintain that it should stay there. But if you just do the Bech Hazara with skipping this step of Hazara, like a thorough kind of Hazara where they learn it again inside, the Bech Hazara, they'll just be reading it and they may not be understanding it. There's no way to gauge that they're really understanding it. No way to gauge. I once heard him speak. I know what you're referring to, about Bech Hazara. I personally feel very strongly that the Bech Hazara is good as a maintenance after. But when the kids first learn the first time, before they take a test, they got to read through it again a couple of times. And many kids, when they do the Chidon, because the Chidon, you don't have a choice. If you want to get a good grade, you got to know what you're doing. And they want to get in the trip, they want to get their prizes. Many kids learn this art of Hazara when they do the Chidon for the first time. But really, when we teach Chumash, that's a further step in order for the learning to be considered that it's cemented in, that you've learned it thoroughly, the Chazara is another important step. Okay. Bez Hashem. So, this page shows on the screen shows the process of the children's Chumash. Just easy to understand, I'm going to be referencing the children's Chumash a lot because a lot of these ideas have been brought out there. If someone else can take these ideas and maybe doing other parishes that there is no children's Chumash and good to learn from, but again, the children's chumash is something that I've created, and it's something that brings out these ideas. The children's chumash is a comprehensive system that teaches all these skills in a visual format, and it's a little bit like if you want to call it a live lesson plan. And you see the different steps. I mean, what you're taking. I can't zoom in. It's not set up on. With Adobe, it's just on a Chrome. I can't zoom in. The truth is, it doesn't really matter. The point I want to bring up from this page is that the Chumash is built that the Psukim page is the center of the unit, and all the skills surrounding it are done through the Psukim page. Another thing I wanted to bring out on this page is, which we'll get to soon, is that the Psukim page, although it's not an actual Chumash, like what you're used to, it does have the Trap and the Rishon, Sheni, Chamishi with all the Psuchos and Stumos. But having the Shirashim on the page and the visual guides on the aids on the page is a very helpful thing that can be used, especially when it's done with a projector. The kids reference the words, and it helps those kids that aren't good with mental imaging, but they need to see things. It helps them learn, use these skills as they're learning, which we'll get more on that soon. So we're going to get to that soon, Bez Hashem. They can use a regular Chumash, yes. I'm going to go through some important Chumash skills, go through the steps of Chumash skills. So the first thing is language. The main three things that I've divided into is language, comprehension, review, and then yes, hurrah. Let's talk about language. So the language is Lashna Kodesh, Chumash is Lashna Kodesh, and the kids need to develop their language skills. Otherwise, it's going to be hardest to learn Chumash, of course, and you don't want them to have to learn from an English Chumash. It's not of course, English Chumash is when someone's older and they need Chayenu not to do Chitas, they should use Chayenu, absolutely. But you want the Lashna Kodesh is the original, and the translation, once you get to the translation, there's already a tzimtzum. Even targum, even different targum is already a machloikis in what exactly the meaning can be. Targum Unglis, Targum Yonasan. The Chumash is the raw language. You want the children to learn from the original source. So here we have, language includes Shuvashim or Yesoides, which are the middle root part, middle part of the word. And then there's prefix, suffixes, and other dictic rules. So one thing, the Shurashim are being used throughout. I mean, people say they should know 30 Shurashim at this age, that age. Shurashim, the concept of Shurashim is being taught from day one. As soon as a kid learns Chumash, they're learning words. They're going to come across words which sound similar and has the same root and the same base. And Shurashim is something that they're going to be using quite a lot. So you're already in Sefer Bereishis, there's already quite a few Shurashim that are already put in. But the way the Chumash is built, the Shurashim are built on a running record where you have old Shurashim and new Shurashim. And the point of that, the idea behind that is the children, instead of it just being Shurashim and skills being something that the children are taught as an abstract separate subject, it should be done through the live Chumash. And I want to just expand on that. When a child uses something, anybody, when you use it, you retain it. If you're not using it, there could be a disconnect. Teaching something dictuk as like an abstract subject, first of all, it's very dry. And second of all, even if the person chapped it and gets 100 in test, there's no guarantee when they actually have it in real life, they're going to actually use it. You can't be guaranteed they're going to. But if you take these skills and you force them to sort, or not force them, but guide them to use it as their, to use it, they're going to retain it much better. Not only that, it's going to make the learning easier as well. So old Shurashim, new Shurashim, that means Shurashim they've learned before, you prepare them in advance beforehand before they learn the Pesukim so that they're ready for it. New Shurashim also you prepare. And when you have the Pesukim, the old Shurashim you're not going to focus on. It's Shurashim that you know that they've learned before and it's been prepared in this format, been prepared already. And when the new Shurashim, when you have the page of Pesukim, this is from Parshat Chayesara, but you see that the Shurashim are there on the page, it allows a child to use, first they have to reference it, they have to underline it. Before they learn it, they have to underline it. When they're reading the Pesukim, if they don't remember the word, or they're not sure, they can look right there and see it, and helps remind them. Now you think you're spoon-feeding, but you're not really, because as a child is referencing it, they still have to read it from inside the words. They're going to retain it better. And later when they review those Shurashim, they're going to review it again. You're going to make sure they master it. They're going to review it on another page where they don't see the Pesukim. And then now that they know these Shurashim, the next set of Pesukim, some of these Shurashim might come up again in the old section. And now they have to go relocate it back again and use it again to help decode the next set of words from the next unit. Aside from Shurashim, there's also Dikduk. Dikduk starts off with basic prefixes and suffixes, but there are also a bunch of other rules. Zachin Akeva, and Shem Poyel, Shem Metzem, and then how that plays out in various... that plays out in various rules and changing some of the meanings of some of the words and some of the prefix suffixes also get changed from Shem Etzem, Shem Poel, knowing the idea of pronouns. The Children's Chumash is still about to finish Parshas Toldos. I'm not going to tell you that it's been through the whole Sifri Dikduk. So right now, Parshas Bereishis to Lech Lecha goes through the basic prefix suffixes, and Vayera to Toldos goes to the next thing where it goes through different points of Zachar Nekeva. It goes through different pronouns, and it goes through, here's some examples, goes through how the prefix suffixes, how they get affected by being changed according to the if it's a noun or a verb. And then there's also pronouns. And the pronouns is really where a lot of these, some of the prefix suffixes, that's what it's for. It's changing a person into a pronoun so that you understand it's referencing that person. Pronoun means where you're Shem Toyer. Where you're taking a person and you're, instead of saying his name, You're saying he, his. There's also a little bit Hayashela, because that comes up, whenever it comes up. Point making so far is that learning the language in the setting of actual learning a Chumash is really a very different experience than learning the language as a separate subject. And I was asked a minute ago about do they need to use a regular Chumash or is this the actual Chumash? The truth is, Chumash is no Tzuras Hadaf. There is no Tzuras. Every Chumash has its own Tzuras Hadaf. Gemara has its Tzuras Hadaf. Why does the Tzuras Hadaf in Gemara, I actually didn't go into it in the other session when I spoke about the Kol HaShas, in the book that I made on the Gemara, it actually does explain why there was a Tzuras Hadaf, because the Goyim tried to manipulate things. That's why the Tzuras Hadaf sort of got some kind of, and things had to be changed from the censor, etc. Tzuras Hadaf took a place in Gemara. In Chumash, there is no Tzuras Hadaf in Chumash. Every Chumash has its own completely different Tzuras Hadaf. You can go and walk into Shul, take four Chumashim, and you'll see every Chumash is different. This Chumash does not have Rashi on the page, but it does have the Tzura of the actual Psukim, meaning say it has the Trap on it, it has the Psuchis and Stumis, and when it's Rishon Sheni, it says that. If a teacher feels comfortable at, you know, I want my children to use a regular chumash, a big chumash. I want them to feel like big boys, and I want them to use a regular chumash like they see in shul and Shabbos when they're sitting at the Kriyas HaTorah. Some teachers will take a regular chumash and not use this as, they don't have to use this page for the learning the chumash. They can use this and also use a regular chumash to when they learn the psukim again or before. I did put in the book that when they get to the Chazara section, they can take, once they know it well, they can take a regular chumash and read from a regular chumash. At least they can feel that. Again, that's up to the discretion of the teacher. But this page does have a very big mila, and the whole concept of, I feel very strongly in this idea, and I've seen it, that when you teach the skills live, it's different than teaching it as a separate subject. And that's something to keep in mind when you're teaching chumash. The next thing in just one point about that. I've got feedback in the past. It's tedious. It's a lot of work to do. And I'll tell you, it's not. All these skills, it's tedious. Yeah, going through every pasuk and fetching it out, it's tedious. The truth is, it isn't, and it makes it faster. I got feedback from one school a couple of years ago in Australia, and they told me that they bought Parshas Vayera Chaisara, and after they start doing it, they finish their curriculum a few weeks earlier than normal. Every year they got to get to a certain point by the end of the year, and they finished it a few weeks early. Doing this process is not really tedious because you're showing the kids what to do step by step instead of telling them all verbally, and it makes it go faster. The next thing is comprehension. So I want to talk a little bit about comprehension. Comprehension, a lot of times we think comprehension is mi amar al mi. Let's give the kids drills of 100 mi amar al mi's, or al mi nemas, let's give them 100 of that. And comprehension is really, it's not exactly like that. Comprehension is that the child reads the psukim, they got to know what's going on. What does it mean? It's telling you something. You have to really understand what you're reading, not just, very often, we give tests. We're going to talk about assessment soon. And we give tests, and the tests basically are testing one area. And you think the smart kids, they're getting 100. But if you go test them on other skills, they may not get 100. They may just, if you test them just on basic comprehension, they get 100 on that, but who says they know the language skills? If we're testing just on language skills, who says they know the comprehension? And very often we do the comprehension. The children know the comprehension of the story, because they listen when they're in preschool with the Mora, they listen to the Parsha every week, so they know the comprehension. But really, when we're teaching Chumash, comprehension is a much more advanced than that. We want that the child should be able to read the words. The first step was decoding. The blue at the bottom. That was the first step. That's only the first step. Now we want them to comprehend what they decoded. So we don't want them to just comprehend, to know the story of the Chumash just outside. We want them to see the story that they decoded the words and now make sense of what they decoded. That's what we want to do. So the next step is questions. Now the questions, that's one reason why the questions are going through the, linking to the words of the Pesukim. How old was that? Some of them are, usually they try and be straightforward. Some of them are like the top one. How old was Sarah when she passed away? That's pretty straightforward. Me'er shana v'shem shana v'sheva shanim. What? The child has to underline the words in the Pesukim that answer the question. Sometimes the question, I don't think on this page it has it, but sometimes the question might have, these are very, usually the questions try to be straightforward. It's who, what, why, where. It's straightforward questions. Sometimes if there's a complicated concept coming out in the Chumash and you don't want to, it's hard to teach it sometimes. I didn't get an example before, but I don't have a live example, but this happens quite often. There's a complicated example, complicated concept, and you want the children to understand it. The questions is a tool to help teach it as well. You write the question where you lead up. You give a little bit of half, you give half away, you give half of it away, and then you ask the question, and that sort of leads the child to understanding what you're getting at. I didn't think of a good example, so I apologize for that. Here also, there's a link to picture page where you're linking the text from the story to the picture. So the kid gets a visual image of what's going on, but the kid has to see it in the words. Now, you know, so some people think, like here, take those questions, oh, straightforward. Have the kids write it, that's more mature. The truth is, having a kid, first of all, some kids at this age, younger age, they're not, depending on the school, they haven't mastered writing yet. And when you're teaching Chumash, you don't want to waste time. Precious time. You're teaching Chumash. You're not teaching writing. It's not a writing class. You want to teach writing, you teach writing in a separate class. If the kids can write easily, then great. But if the kids can't write easily, you don't want to spend time on tedious activities that take a long time when really your goal in this question is that the kids should, number one, learn the answer and demonstrate the answer. So you don't want to spend time. For the kid, it really only takes 20 seconds to do that. You don't want to spend more than 20 seconds. Why spend 5 minutes if it could take 20 seconds? You'll get through the learning faster. So the pages go that there's a lot of underlining for that reason. However, a lot of times people don't realize this is actually a hard skill. It's much harder than writing it. If I tell you, how old was Sarah when she passed away? Every kid will tell you, 127, easy. I mean, here it says actually to write it out. But if I write, if I have to underline the words, so I got to realize, Me'er shana v'shem shana v'sheva shanim. Don't underline Shnei Chai Sar. That's not part of the answer. That really shows more of a textual comprehension skill. The kid has to amass a textual comprehension skill much more than if they just tell you outside what's going on. But again, you're right, but if it was a Parsha class, that would be right. But this is not a Parsha class. They learn Parsha every week. They learn Parsha in preschool. And the goal of teaching Chumash is that you want the kids to learn the story from a text. This is a textual class. That's the whole goal. You want them to be able to make sense from a text. Listen, if a kid is not shaykh to and a kid is struggling, obviously you're right. You don't want the kid to feel that. If I can't do text, then my learning is nothing worth. You're right. But at the end of the day, at first, second grade, when we're teaching from the beginning, we really want them to get the language skills as much as possible. The comprehension comes after the Pesukim. Yeah, like this page, for example, you're going to read the Pesukim exactly how you do now, where you might read the Pesukim 5-10 times. You're going to still do that. The page here shows translate 2 times. It's in the bottom. Really, most teachers are doing more than twice, you hope. But but that's just there as like a minimum. And it's just the idea at the bottom there that you check it off. It makes the kid know that they did. Just holds the kid in check. Holds the children in check that it's got recorded. What they feel accountable. They know they want to do it and they get it signed and they get it checked off. Makes them know they want to do it. It's not going to write over there times 5 or times 6. But the truth is, those decoding skills like this is before, yeah. This is, when you do this, you do the same thing you would do already now. It's just having this on the page and having those skills before might make it easier. Here too, sometimes, I mean, this page doesn't have it, but like here, draw shape around the passing number. There are some times where, like in Parshas Bereishis, where it keeps it open-ended. It doesn't say where. For the kid to start thinking which parts of psukim go to which part of picture, it makes kids start thinking, and even makes adults start thinking. And some kids have difficulty at the beginning, even the smart kids. It's a different skill than just reading and translating psukim some kids are good with that, but when it comes to making sense and having a mental image of the words that you're saying, the meaning of it, lav dafka does it come automatic, and it's a good thing to do this, because most of the kids that do this, after a little while, they'll get the hang of it. And I'll start seeing that when I'm reading the words, I got to make sense of it. This word might be connected. Only these three words are connected, not these four words. Sometimes comprehension, I was given this idea from an Olah Torah Rebbe. I'll say his name, why not? Zach Latoyev Rabbi Tzvil, a few years ago. This is a brilliant idea, and it's been implemented. That you're doing so many activities, so make sure that you can't have like the questions. You can't have like 20 questions. The kids will get bored. So instead, what you do is for comprehension, make sure that it's always there. If it's not in this page, it's in a different page. So sometimes there might be comprehension that's in the question, and then if there was something that's needed to know in the comprehension that was not in the question page, it might come up on this page. And on occasion, it might come up on, let me see if I brought it here. I didn't bring it here. Sometimes on the dictic page it might come up. For example, the pronouns, when the children are doing pronouns, so mi amar al mi, or al mi nemar, that's a pronoun question. So they might be doing the dictic page, and that's going to address the comprehension. It was attempted that nothing gets left out. So as you take like every pasuk and every group of psukim, anything that the child may not 100% understand, it's been put inside. If I get feedback, sometimes the teacher might give me feedback. You know, you missed this out, you missed that out. Okay, well, I take note of it and gets put in. But generally, b'derach klal, it was attempted to have it in. By the later parashiyos, Some related parshas have more questions, a little more questions, as the kids get older. From parshas Vayera, so put in a bite-sized Rashi with a question to make the kids think. But it does not teach kids how to read Rashi letters, because that's a separate subject, really, but there's books for that. Okay, Chazara. Someone asked before about Chazara. So how do you do Chazara? So for example, here. So it comes to Chazara, you finish the parak, and you do Chazara. Chazara has the same page again of Sukkim. But you don't do all those skills beforehand, because you do that before already. But you got to read it again and get it checked off that you actually read it. Chazara, when we talk about Chazara, that just doing Chazara, the first time doing Chazara, the kids have to actually read the psukim. Just like they read it the first time, the kids have to actually read the psukim. When they do the first time Chazara, it's not quick. It's not something you can do in 5-10 minutes. If a kid spent 2 weeks, in general, the formula, for every day of learning, every 3 days of learning, should take at least 1 day Chazara. So if your kid spent 2 weeks learning something, if you're going to do Chazara properly, expect it to take at least 3 days. If it's taking 1 day, it's impossible they're going to learn what they learned in 2 weeks. They're going to learn it thoroughly again, reviewing it. It's impossible. How could they have done it in 1 day? It's not possible. The only way it's possible to do that is if it's being fast-tracked. But if it's really done properly, when a kid's learned something the first time they do Chazara, it does go slow. Because first time Chazara, they're still cementing all that information. So they've finished the whole parak. They're going to now actually read the psukim again. However, when they now have to do it again, No, I didn't have it here. But when they have to do it again, the third time, the fourth time, that goes very fast. Because the first time doing Chazara is really putting it all together. Doing other times Chazara is quick. So in the Chazara section, just one second, the Chazara section is reading the Psukim, but also reviewing the Shirashim, and also reviewing the Dikduk. Make sure that they review the main Dikduk that they learned, that Perek. Yeah, that's a Chazara page. It's basically identical to the first page, but at the bottom, instead of having underlining Shirashim, they don't underline it again, because they underlined it the first time, and they should be able to do it without referencing. The first time they underlined it, so they reference it. So like this, if they're not sure, they see the underline. If they don't remember, they can quickly look. Now they should be able to get it faster. But they got to actually read the psukim and sign that they actually read it. By the time they've gone through that process, you'll see that most kids in the class will know the entire parak backwards and forwards. Now I spoke a little bit before about Hira. They also review the pictures too. You have to match the psukim to the pictures. I'm talking a little bit about Hora. Hora is something, like I said before, you can do it in 5 minutes, and you just can spend a few weeks learning a parak and chumash, and then get to Hora and do it in 5 minutes, and do quick chak. The truth is, Hora is the hardest part of teaching chumash. The proof of that is, you won't find much out there on Hora. Every teacher has to really be on their own. Like you teach the Chumash, and now you have to think of a lesson to give over to the children. Now, sometimes it comes easy. Without planning, I can tell you, it's very hard to do. It takes a lot of planning, and without planning, it's very hard to do. And even with planning, it's hard to find. I can tell you that in this particular project, the children's Chumash, every time to have a Ra, really, ideally, it would be able to have a Ra for every single pasuk. It's not possible to stick down a Chumash. So what I did is, at the end of every parak, find something that's the heart of the parak, the heart of the lesson that Hashem is trying to give us, and then find a story that goes aligned with that and matches it. I can tell you, this whole project is the hardest job. It takes the most effort, it takes the hardest job. You have to research it, think it really carefully, and it's the hardest job. And I remember once asking a seasoned mechanech, very seasoned mechanech, he knows tons of stories, and I asked him, okay, I need help with this perek, what's the Hora? I think this is the Hora. He understood, yeah, okay, do you have a story that matches? He couldn't think off the top of his head. You teach Chumash, and you have to give these Horas to the children, but without thinking it carefully, it's very hard to give over. Now, take this one for example. This is called the Master Artist. This is a famous, it's a really a mashal from Chovos Halvavos. It's not. I don't think it's an actual story that happened. With a king and the spilled ink. And the he asked, how do I know that Hashem really created the world? How do I know? And he told him, as he left, he quickly spilled some ink and drew some painting. And he came back and said, who made this? He said, it may happen by itself. He said, how could it happen by itself? It's impossible. He said, see? How could the whole world happen by itself? Obviously Hashem created. So he was all impressed. This story is linked to the Hora from first parak in Bereishis. The first parak in Bereishis is Sheshis Mei Bereishis. That Bereishis Bara Elokim, Hashem created the world. That's the heart of the whole parak. Bereishis Bara Elokim, Hashem created the world. This story brings that out. When you teach your children Chumash, and they get to the end of Chumash, and you come to this Hora, getting this into their head, that it translates everything they learned, now to translate into something Maisur Poel, something into action, this is really, although it's the last finishing thing that can take only a few minutes, this is the most powerful tool that you can give over to the children, and this is the thing that really takes all the learning they did and actually bring it home. Now, in the children's Chumash, what's interesting is that some of the prakim of Hora, usually it's just a simple story, one or two pages, connected to something they learned the parak. And at the beginning, it usually, on top here, like it says, Hashem created the entire universe, even the smallest details. It says something about what it has to do with the Chumash. But in certain prakim, as you read through the psukim, you come across themes that need a little more than that. So for example, Parshas Lech Lecha made a whole, some of you might have seen it, some of you might have used it already, some of you might have learned it already. Read through it already. Parshas Lech Lecha has a whole history of Eretz Yisrael. Parshas Bereishis at the beginning, Rashi says, quotes from the Medrash about the famous thing of Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, that the Torah could have really started from Achodesh Hazeh Lachem. And why does the Torah start from Parshas Bereishis? And Rashi says, because, the Medrash says, because in case the Goyim will say, Listim Atem, you stole Eretz Yisrael. In case the Goyim will say, Listim Atem, you should know what to answer. From there we learn that the whole entire slave of Bereishis was written, till Parshas Boy is written for that, primarily for that purpose. So to come to Parshas Lach Lecha, and that's where Hashem is promising Eretz Yisrael, that's really connected to this theme. And that's something that really had to be brought out well. For example, it says in Parshas Lach Lecha four times where Hashem promises Eretz Yisrael to Avram. If you ask most people, most kids and adults too, what are the four times for? Why four times? I'll have to think for a second. We know the Rebbe spoke in the Sichus, one of the themes that the Rebbe spoke with the most passion and most often was Shlemus Aretz. And in the Rebbe's argument about Shlemus Aretz was that Eretz Yisrael belongs to us because the Torah says so. The main argument in Eretz Yisrael belongs to us is because the Torah says so. When we teach children Parshas Lech Lecha, that is the opportunity and the time to give that over to children, that a child should walk out of our classroom. They've learned Parshas Lech Lecha. They should now know our proof from the Torah, know what to answer, listim atem. They should know what to answer to goyim and say listim atem. So Parshas Lech Lecha is really this opportunity. Why taka four times? If we don't know that, how are we going to know what our proof from the Torah is? So the book addressed that. It also takes the concept of Shlemus Aretz and brings it out into through history into modern times. Has a little bit of a Six-Day War over there. A little bit about UN Resolution 242, and it goes through a whole bunch of different things of how it plays out till today. And it brings out the Rebbe's argument about Eretz Yisrael not being Mevater, and it gives us over to the children. This was, like I said, the Hoirah generally is something that has to do with the Perek, but when it came up, something that is Negeah to the, a little more Negeah, like you learn Parshas Lech Lecha, you got to know about Shlemus Aretz, that's what it's for. So it's there. Parshas Chayei Sara is learning about Chevron. So there was something there for history of Chevron. And in Mitzvah Shem and Parshas Tolis, it talks about Yaakov and Esav. And is in Mitzvah Shem going to be something that, which says, there comes, then Neufel. There's going to be something shown through history of how this played out, of Yaakov and Esav through history till today. Now, why are skills important, and how do the skills come together to this objective, like I said before? If we want the children to succeed in Chumash and become independent learners, if we want the children to succeed in Chumash and become independent learners, all these skills need to come together. If the skills don't come together, the children are not... If the skills don't come together, children are not going to get it as much. When the children see how these skills all come together in harmony and they're able to really make sense of what they're doing, it gives them a bigger cheshek. And it makes them more motivated to succeed. And you will find, I mean, some of you are using this Chumash already, but I've heard this from people, that as a child, and I've seen this myself too, as the children go through this style of learning, after the beginning, you might think it feels tedious, but as the children go through it, with time gradually, you will see a marked improvement and a marked enhancement in how the children approach learning a Chumash. It's not spoon-feeding. If anything, it makes it that when the child learns from a Chumash later, at an older age, even a year or two later, they enjoy it and they get a positive taste and they understand what they're doing. It really enhances their learning. Now, I want to talk a little bit about visuals. So this type of material is very visual, as you can see. And I want to talk a little bit about the importance of visuals. One thing when we teach visuals, we don't want to take away the child's imagination. One of the complaints I've had outside Chabad is that the Avos and Moris are not shown from the back. I was told that according to the Rebbe's profile, so the Avos and Moris are always profile. But even so, the pictures are drawn a little bit abstract, not real, in order not to limit the child's imagination. However, When the child starts learning in a visual style, it's a completely different mode of learning. And I'm going to give a couple of examples. So Parshas Vayera has a story of Hagar over here, how Hagar has to be sent away, and it says Yishmael was Samar Shichma. He put her on a, she put her on put him on put her on a shoulder. Now, I learned this in Chitas year after year after year after year. I never thought about it. And I start getting things to pictures. You've got to start thinking in the mind of a child who is lav dafka such a big Talmud Chacham, a child who lav dafka is good at learning, and it's going to make sense to this child. So I started, and you want to put in pictures because they're going to have to do these activities where they're going to match the words with the picture, the different parts of the picture. So he starts thinking in a different style. And he's thinking, okay, I got to put this in a picture. Wait a second. I was writing out the description for the illustrator, and I get to Sama Shichma. Wait a minute. Hagar, Yishmael was 13 when he had a bris. Yitzhak was born a year later. Yishmael is being sent away when Yitzhak is already over two. Vayigmal is already over two. We don't know how. I don't know if someone knows a marker from where it says how old he was exactly. He's definitely two, maybe older. So Yishmael is at least 16. A 16-year-old boy in those days was probably more mature than today. How could Hagar carry a 16-year-old boy on her shoulder? Ask any of your wives or mothers if they could carry a 16-year-old on their shoulder. I don't think it's possible. So I started looking for Farshim. I have to put this in a picture. You put in a picture, it's got to make sense. So I'm going to put a 16-year-old, it's going to be accurate. I'm going to put a 16-year-old child on the, it's not going to look normal. So I started looking for Farshim, and I found in Rashi, in one of the Mefarshi Rashi, Nachos Yaakov, he says there that Hagar put an ayin hara on Yishmael. I mean, Sarah put an ayin hara on Yishmael, and he shrunk. And if you look at the picture, it shows that. I explained it. The picture, thinking in a visual way, is what made me come to this maskana, and it's accurate. Another example. What? It says. Yeah, it says there. Right there, look. No, Nachas Yaakov is the Mefarshi Rashi. Right. Yeah. Here's another one. I didn't write the marker for this for a reason. I don't know if it's right or not, because it's from the Kutei Sichus. But in the Kutei Sichus, Chelek Yud, this is where this marker comes from. Comes the marble. I had to draw the marble. So you come to the marble, and what color was the sky? So Rashi says, everyone knows that after it says, oi, call you me, whatever, lo yishpoisu. So Rashi says that the kol shnas amabel, kol yomoyis amabel, lo shim shemazalis. So the pashtus, the color of the sky during the marbel is black. There's no light, there's no mazalis are not operating. So we have her picture here, it's black. Came across it in a ha'ara in the Kutei Sichus in Chelek Yud, that Rashi's marker is from Talmud Yerushalmi. And Talmud Yerushalmi says, kol shnas hamabel. L'shim shum azal is kol shnas hamabel. Rashi's mishana the lashon from shnas hamabel to yomoyis hamabel. And the Rebbe says in the Pnim, it wasn't, but Pashtus, there's no, Rashi's pshuta shemikra. Rashi doesn't like to add extra miracles unnecessarily. So with Pashtus, he pshuta shemikra, the mazal is not operating, was only needed during the yomoyis hamabel, not the time afterwards, when the water was going down and the marble itself stopped already, it wasn't needed to say such a miracle. So Rashi's Mishana from Shnas HaMabel to Yemoyis HaMabel. So it made sense, based on that, it made sense. So when you're drawing a picture and the water's starting to go down, I'm not going to show a black sky, that wouldn't be accurate then. Which, when we're teaching this Chumash, it makes sense for children. You want to go according to Pirush Rashi, not according to Adam Mepharshim. Not, I got, you don't want to start Agada unless it's in Pshat, like the way Rashi puts Agada in Pshat. So I've made this sky is blue. This is just another example how when you do things visually, all these details come out, and you have to put it in the mind of a child. It makes you think of things that you never thought of before, and it really gives the child a different view of what's going on in the words in the psukim. Another thing with visuals, I can't show two pages here because the way it's set up on the it was done on Adobe, but he doesn't have Adobe on here. But use of maps and charts. So when it's relevant, it's not always, but when it's relevant, sometimes maps and charts are very helpful for children. This is a good example. The marble, if you learn Parshas Nerech, a lot of schools go through Parshas Nerech very quickly because it's just like towards the latter part of the year. But if you do Parshas Noach, if you come to the marble, when you learn the marble, there's so many dates going on and so many things going on, it can be hard to hold up. So when you have it in a chart like this, it helps the children see everything they've learned. Okay, Rashi says, this day in Mecheshvan, and it's this amount of days from here to here. Having it in a chart just shows it clear. This also, you come to, also Parshas Noach, when you go through the Doris, the children, you can read those sukkim. Some schools might be tempted to just read through those sukkim in an hour, and then let's move on to go through all the names, right? But really, it's teaching you something. These are the mocker of the Shivim Umos. The 70 nations come from the Doris of Shem, Cham, and Yafes. That is the Shivim Umos. So it's obviously an important thing to know. Not so clear on the screen, but the charts show the numbers. And they have an activity also, as the Psukim goes through the different Doris, you could just read names, it sounds like you're reading names, but if you go through if you pay attention carefully, this one came after this, and this one came after that, and you need it. If you have it in a chart like this, you can visualize it much easier. Here also, Avram traveling. That whole part, Bein Ai, Bein Mikedem, and Rashi, the whole thing, it's east and west, you can get a little lost. When you have it on a picture, you can see it more clear. Okay, now, a teacher's guide. I get asked this question a lot, why don't you put a teacher's guide? A teacher's guide means that the teacher has to prepare activities. Now, I was told years ago, you know, why don't you have extra activities? You know what, there's always room for enhancement, there's always room for more activities than what's in here. There is always room for more activities. However, these are the core activities. The kids, like I said before, going through all those skills, the steps, these are the core activities. Instead of a teacher's guide, in the book, there is a tutorial. The tutorial explains the function of everything. It shows what something looks like when it's filled out. Here also. Shows what it's supposed to look like when it fills out. It's something that really, if any of you are using this book, it's something a very important part to read through because a lot is explained over there. It's at the beginning, yeah. It's like a 30, 40 pages, going through each page, showing a sample, what the function is and what it means. Instead of a teacher's guide, the book has sort of everything laid out already. Because their kids need to see what it looks like. Now, how can you use this type of learning and this book? I mean, I said someone asked if it's an advertisement. I'm trying to give up a chumash skills, but at the end of the day, this is what I produce. So I'm just explaining how to use this. How do you use this type of material? Ideally, the teachers really are going to give their feedback. The teachers are using it already. They'll probably give their feedback, and they're probably mastered already. But ideally, the class does the pages together, especially at the beginning. If the class will do the pages independently at the beginning, some kids won't know what to do. You want the kids to get oriented to know what to do. Teacher could have the children doing it independently and then just spot checking everybody's doing right. Or you can have you come to the question, let's say this page, you could do this out loud together as a class and get into a discussion about it, and then everybody does it. One of the things in this book is that as far as gauging that the children are doing the work, you can. This page has the space for signature because this is the most important page, but you could put on other pages, just get a quick check from the teacher and make sure that the child has done it. There's also a lot of line matching, underlining, highlighting. There isn't that much writing, just to make it easier to get through. Now, I also get asked about a digital file, like I said earlier in the other session, that anyone who has a paid print copies for their students, if they need a digital file because they want to show a projector, I think it's much easier. Some teachers feel they need this, and not everybody does this, but if you have a projector file, just when you working with the children and you're trying to show them what page they're up to, what page they're doing, if it's on the screen, it's just so much easier to use. So anyone who needs, this does not cost anything. Once there's paid print copies for all the students, they just reach out through the email, they get a copyright waiver, and then they get a digital file to access. Now, I spoke also about the skills. What are the skills I mentioned before of the prefix suffixes? In Parshas Vayera is already a new, a more higher format. So in Parshas Vayera, we'll go back a step. On this page, the basic prefix suffixes they learned already in Parshas gracious to Lech Lecha is constantly there for referencing. So that when the children have to answer the questions here, they can reference it. So they don't lose it. But they're not going to be learning it from scratch again because they already learned it before. Parshas Bereishis and Noach is prefix suffix, and Parshas Lech Lecha is a review of both. Now, assessing Chumash. I'm going to get into a whole topic here. Assessing Chumash. We just went through a whole bunch of skills. When you give an assessment for Chumash, I'm not going to tell you, there is no assessment going along with this. It has been in the works, but it hasn't been published yet. So I can't offer that to you at the moment. But already now, if assessment in Chumash, you're not just assessing for one skill. All these skills, like I said before, need to work in harmony for the child to be successful in Chumash. The child's good in the comprehension, but he doesn't have the language, the comprehension is lacking. The child's good in the language, but he doesn't get the comprehension, it's also lacking. You want the child to be successful in Chumash. You need all those skills to work in harmony together. So the assessment really should test for all those skills. Many typical assessments will often only be testing for one. If you have a page of a test with 10 questions of just the comprehension, you're only testing comprehension, and you may not even be testing for textual comprehension. Sometimes you might have, some teachers might have 10 questions and then 10 translations. Again, you're only testing for those translations. You aren't testing to see, does the child know how to build a word themselves? Can the child take the Shirashim they've learned and apply it to another word? Does the child even retain those Shirashim? You're not testing for that. So therefore, the best way of assessment is to take all these skills and to test each one, the Shorash identification, Shorashim knowledge, Shorash identification, the dictic rules, the comprehension, linking to the picture. These are all step skills that need to be assessed independently. Now, you could test it as like 20 out of 100. Personally, I prefer, and that makes a kid feel bad if they, let's say, get an 85 or 90 and they got 5 out of, let's say someone got 20 out of 20 for four skills, and the fifth skill they got 5 out of 20. It's got 85 in tests, it doesn't look bad. But then you're not, the parent and the child is not acknowledging that they need help, they're deficient in this particular area. So what I prefer to do is to have, where the assessment has 5 different grades, each thing is out of 100. So they might get 100 on this, and 15 on that, and then they can feel good about this skill, and this skill they know they need to work. No, so I was saying the book doesn't have an assessment yet. It has been in the works. I'm not going to say it's ready, but like a couple of parshas already, most of it was created. It has to, whatever. There's still some work needed for it. I can't offer it yet, but Amit Hashem, I hope at some point it will come out. Okay, we're going to have question and answers in a minute, but one of the most common questions I get asked, so I'm not going to wait for anyone to ask it, and I'm going to ask it now. I get asked this question probably once a month. The workbook activities are tedious and the books cost money. We usually don't pay for textbooks that each child needs to have. Why can't we just use elements of the children's Chumash? I'll even pay you. Can I just pay you? I bought one book. Can I pay you to just photocopy parts of pages that I need in my classroom? I don't need everything anyways. And can I just pay you to photocopy the pages that I want? Give me a digital file. I promise you I won't share it. I won't share it. I'll even pay for the copies. I'm being very honest. You know, I didn't even have to call you. I'm being very honest to call you. Is it okay? So I want to go over this point quickly. A textbook that you use is the bread and butter of, I've said this before, the textbook you use is the bread and butter, for those that are new, textbook that you use is the bread and butter of what you're doing teaching. You're paying thousands of dollars in tuition, paying $15 versus $40 or $30 on a book, on a textbook, is just plain Kebeldick. It's not something you want to skimp on. If you had a fancy house and there was no windows, would you not install windows? That's not even the best marshal. The textbook is the bread and butter that really structures the classroom. This, first of all, for classroom management, it's an amazing tool for classroom management because you're giving the kids a framework and a structure what to work from. The kids are very motivated, much more motivated when they have the book. The kids enjoy it. Like this Rebbe said before, how his kids are into it and that they're sort of guiding him what he has to do. It's something you don't want to skimp on. But more than that, And like I said earlier, that a 472-page book is not a little workbook. It's a textbook. A 470-page book is not something that you can sell for 15. It's just you can't print it at that. Nowadays, especially since COVID, you can't print it so cheap like that. It's not possible. Ah. So they should be careful with it. Right. It's 40-something in the store. The stores actually have only the half volume, so it looks cheaper. The parsha that offered is a half, whole book, or like half a parsha per book. Some teachers like to... What? You can tell them 50 because we pay shipping and that. Whatever, you want the kids to feel the chashivas, he's right. What? Yeah, you can do half book at a time. And it's cheaper, but it costs more for the whole thing, but it's cheaper, yeah. Really, go for some children, I want to just emphasize one more point about this. For some children, going through this type of learning can change their destiny. That some children, when all this was thought out of all children in mind. This is a powerful inclusion tool. Some children will not make it in Chumash. It doesn't just affect Chumash. It affects their whole functioning, self-esteem, their social, emotional psyche. Affects everything. And this can make a difference in the child's destiny in being successful. And I've got feedback from some, I get a lot of homeschool parents that buy it or parents with kids that need help, whatever. And they say, my child uses books this year. I showed it to the teacher. I'm showing it to the teacher. I want to make sure the teacher's using it. My child used it. He used to be the bottom of the class. This year he was at the top of the class. Now, one thing about, why can't I just photocopy parts and elements? Aside from the money and aside from the money involved in that, point to give over. The motivation that behind the a lot of the things that the people like is, oh yeah, there's nice pictures. There's nice pictures. I like the pictures. These pictures are not regular parsha pictures. These are pictures that have been carefully thought out that really come from the text and the way Rashi learns it, etc. It's been thought out. So they like the pictures. But the truth is that the motivation behind creating these pictures is the same motivation behind all the other stuff in the book. And to split it up is just not what it's all about. Okay, lastly, there's another question I get asked. How does it fit in with the Zuckerman standards? There's a thing was made a few years ago by a group of people, Menachem Foundation, called the Zuckerman standards, by a couple of principals, and some schools are using it, and it's a whole bunch of standards. So how does this fit in with the Zuckerman standards? I get asked that too. So I'm going to just say quickly about that this is not the Zuckerman standards. It's a system that it's innovation, completely innovative. Try not to look at other people's stuff or anything. However, I did glance through them. And I'll tell you that the Zuckerman standards, this definitely goes in line with it. The Zuckerman standards is a good point of reference. At the same time, these books can actually implement the Zuckerman standards easier than if you just read them and you have to go create everything all yourself from scratch. Same time, if just to take note that standards are theory. And when something is a theory, it's not practice. So some things that are written there, when you have to actually put in practice, actually teaching it, can't always go in that order, that exact amount, but it doesn't mean it doesn't address all those standards. Any questions? Yeah. Okay, good question. I was ready for that one. First of all, I did teach, but I'm going to tell you something. The guy who's the engine, the architect of the house, is not the one that builds it. The job of a teacher is to give it over. The teacher is delivering it over. My job in creating these books and creating this material is not to be the teacher. My job is to map out the architecture. It's not the same skill. That's just point one. But I will tell you that right now I don't teach a classroom. I don't have time for that. I would take away. I wouldn't be able to do all this. I do teach some kids privately. But I will tell you that I did teach a few years ago. I had a program. It was a remedial program. It wasn't a regular classroom. It was a remedial program, but I did teach, yes. Now, I want to just make another point about that. I would have had it then, but that's what spurred this to be created. I will tell you that one of the times people say, "Oh, your field, I'm known in remediation. I'm known in that. Your field's remediation. I'm a regular classroom." I'm going to tell you something that we know Sis explains that reach something that's or choizer versus or yashar reaches a deeper level of chachma. I have a certain benefit that I've worked with some children. Aside from having that program, I've also worked with some children for many years at a time. And it's given me the opportunity to get sort of a glimpse of the entire curriculum, the system of curriculum from start to finish. How you're teaching in first grade, how that links to later on and what they're going to learn when they're in Zal and beyond. I've sort of had a grasp of that, and I sort of see that. I get a bird's eye view. Especially when you have different children, different abilities, different ages, and some children going through the system. I've had some children when I've worked with for 9 or 10 years, I've got to see through that. In addition, when you have to think of the child that is, sometimes I've worked with children that are not schwach, they're actually very bright. Being bright can also be a handicap sometimes because you're not challenged. But when you have to bring something down to the schwachest person, it yields a deeper level of chachma. And I gave you some of those examples of those pictures. If you're teaching the smart kids, you wouldn't bother explaining some of shichma. But the kid that you think is needs remediation, he's going to ask that question, how does she fit on her shoulder? He's the one that's going to ask that question. And that's what makes you think of it. Any other questions? Yeah. You want to ask a question? Or? I think it could be used across the board, and it's some schools. There are schools using it. Like he was telling me before, he's using it for 6 years in all the Torah, the Yiddish version, and they love using it. Another Yiddish school in Nyack. They used it, and they really love using it. And I get the Hebrew schools that have used it for a few years, and they also love using it. And I think everybody could benefit. As far as the age. So the format looks like it's more for younger ages, and the truth is, ideally, it should be younger ages, because Parshas Bereishis, for example, you don't want a kid starting to learn Parshas Bereishis in sixth grade, you want them to learn in first or second grade. So when it was created, it had to be created for younger children in mind. End of the day, though, if there's a child if you're working privately with a child, or there's a cure of school, and they're fifth grade, and they haven't learned Chumash before, I still think they could manage, but that's up to the preference of the teacher. I think they do this live. This is Shurashim right away. From Bereishis, it goes through Shurashim ready, and they're learning the Shurashim live as they're going along from the words they're using. To teach them Shurashim as a separate class is redundant. I think it's extra. But you're going to do this in this book. For example, here. You're going to come to this. You finish the unit, and you're going to come to this page over here. They're going to review the Shurashim. They're going to have to fill it out, and they're going to review those Shurashim. There is a set of Shurashim cards, but I only have two Pashas Lach HaKa at the moment created. There is a set of Shurashim cards that some schools buy. Not everybody needs it, but some schools like it. Usually it's the smaller schools. And the kids can... Yes, so at the end of the... So the end of the parak over here in the Chazar, this is the Chazar section. So the Chazar section, this is a sample page. That usually a parak might have like three of these. There might be like three of these. When they review the parak, you want them to review all the Shurashim. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So first of all, it's a hybrid. The book, it's one book. I mean, but it's a hybrid. It's a workbook and a textbook. I hear you, but the whole mahalach is that what's a textbook? the textbook means it's where they're learning from. A workbook means you're just reinforcing activities. But you want that the activities should be built in and integrated with the textual learning, and that's how the book is designed. So it's not really split up. But most of these pages, okay, so first of all, most pages, most pages have writing, so how, there won't be any pages like that. But also, it's not $50. The school can reach out and get a bulk discount, and it's in the 30s. It comes out, when they get a bulk discount, it's in the 30s. And if there's a school that really can't afford, just like, I mean, I'm not rich enough to just distribute it for free. But if there's a school that really, really can't afford, just like schools, a good Jewish school never turns away a child for lack of money, no one will be turned away. If they want to use this product, we'll turn away for lack of money. But that doesn't mean to take advantage of that. And like I said before, the cost to pay $30-something, understand, from your point of view as a teacher, it's not your decision, it's the principal's decision. Between me and you, if a parent is paying $10,000 tuition, how could a teacher, this is a mentality that's out there, and it's sort of being fought against. Like the wind is blowing this way, and I'm saying something that's going this way. But really, how could you skimp on it? A Goetia textbook costs $100 at least. Depends. First of all, you don't reuse it forever because after 2 years they make it obsolete and they make you buy a new one. They say it's not according to standards anymore and they do a new edition and it doesn't count. It doesn't last forever. And some math textbooks you have to write in it. Some of those math textbooks you got to write in it. For $30-something on bulk discount. I'm not arguing with you. This is against the administration's policies. Right. But just money, it's a certain mindset. We get everything for free on chinuch.org. Why should this not be free? Why should there be something that we pay for? I'm saying people think it's a mentality out there. We're not used to it because people haven't created this kind of stuff before. Most things are just sample pages just free up online, and that's fine. But if you want something professional, it costs. I mean, to print this, just to print it, it costs money. Right. Right. The Yardas book costs $54. Sometimes they can get a discount, but it costs $54. And the Yardas book is not the core. I mean, I think it's a great product, but it's not the core learning. This is core learning. This is the core textual learning, and it's really something you don't want to. A principal has to. I guess the job of the teacher to sort of explain to the principal and explain to the parent body. It's not something you want to skimp on. And many of the parents, when they see the kids coming home with a $30 textbook and it looks impressive, they'll actually appreciate it. Okay, first of all, the binding, it's soft cover. The binding is a very good quality. That means the cover itself doesn't rip. The company that I use, it doesn't rip, which is very good. The hardcover book, there's only one book that's hardcover, and that's not relevant for Chumash anyways. Hardcover is always, I'm more fragile than soft cover. But the soft cover is quite good. It is quite good. But having a child take home a big fat book like that is going to weigh the child down. So what you can do is, instead of having the child take it home every day in the backpack, you keep it in the classroom. You keep it in the classroom. In general, when people ask, can I photocopy? I always say no, of course. However, if you want to photocopy pages for a paid copy already, and you want the child to do extra stuff at home, let's say repeat some of the pages, and you want to copy it ahead of time, it's okay. If you bought the book for the child, and the child's just going to redo some of those pages at home, it's okay to photocopy.
And how does it work? Every book is one parsha?
Every book is one parsha. You can buy, some of the parshas have half volumes, which means half a parsha per book, and it's cheaper. Per book, but it's cheaper to get the whole parsha in one book than over two.
And
I don't have it here, no. I didn't bring it here, no. I'll be accused. I'll be choshed if I would do that. I mean, there's tables out there. I didn't arrange like to do that. I didn't pay for that. Right. Lashon Yofi. Melitza. Sometimes it's the rabbis. S is Yofi Melitza. Sometimes it's Yofi Melitza. Okay, yeah.
What